When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome to my second part interview with trauma therapist and author Andy Colbert. This week, we're going to continue to talk about healing from trauma, and we're going to talk about her newest book, Take What You Need, Soft Words for Hard Days. You know how when you're a trauma, you tend to be hypersensitive to tones and facial expressions, harsh words, criticism, and this can make us anxious because we're always trying to feel out a situation so that we can feel safe. And so what I really appreciate about Andy's work is that she has integrated into her work the importance of how good it is for our bodies, our souls, our mind to be approached with softness, with gentleness, with kindness, with compassion. And I love that about her book. And I love that about her. So now on to the episode with Andy Colbert.
Welcome, Andy. Thank you so much for having me. And the book that we're going to be talking a bit about today is your newest book. I'm going to show it here. It's called Take What You Need, Soft Words for Hard Days. Not only is it an incredible book, it is also beautiful. It's got these beautiful artwork, and it's like the soothing words and the comforting words go with the book. So it's an experience. It's what it feels like. I'm so honored to hear that. You talked about it was like you were a fly on the wall. You said something like, I know that you're still having hard days. I don't know the exact words, but essentially you spoke to how sometimes even as we're healing, we're going to have days that feel like it feels like we're kind of going backwards and it's hard.
Yeah, that has been something that's been important for me to write about. And just when I talk, wherever I go, including in this book, I think normalizing sort of the ebb and flow of healing that, you know, I think I've seen Dr. Arielle Schwartz talk about, I think it's the lotus flower that as it's expanding, as it's blooming, it will contract. And then it will go out again. It has this dance in the process of the blooming that at times it actually contracts a little bit before it expands even more. And I mean, this is a concept I've been writing about anyways for a long time. But when I heard about that, and I'm fairly certain that it's a lotus flower, I could be wrong. But what a beautiful metaphor for healing. Right. Because I think so often, I mean, and I've seen this with clients and because there can be a discouragement that maybe you start therapy or you're trying to do something different or you're integrating healing practices and that you find yourself to be more tender. Right. Or you're grieving. You're finding yourself grieving a lot. And certainly, like, we want to ebb and flow. Right. But that there is a reality that part of the healing often means a revisiting to the pain, but in a way that hopefully we have more resources this time.
Yeah.
Right. It's almost like that first thing that you mentioned about the I'm sorry for what you've experienced, like the apology, that there's a way in which sometimes we get to be the witness now for ourselves that we didn't have. And that's part of sometimes the returning to those prior experiences is to bring maybe the compassion or more community or care that wasn't there the first time. And it doesn't mean it's comfortable always.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's what it reminds me of, like that there are still hard days in that. And it doesn't mean you're not healing.
I just love that, because what a beautiful way of seeing it, and even seeing and understanding that those times of contractions can hurt, but now we have some tenderness with the resources, be it a therapist as a witness, or we're feeling this way, but then we look around and we recognize, oh, but I'm in my own home and safety right at this moment. It still hurts. It's still contracting, but there's like more resources, more, it's different now. And so I love that. And I also, now I'm not going to forget the lotus when I feel myself going through one of those hard moments that, okay, this is just part of it. It's going to feel this way, and then it's going to release, and then it's going to feel that way again. But this is part of the process. This is what I mean about your work. You have a way of just making things feel more comfortable and hopeful. And I want to say soothing. I mean, it's just, yeah, I really like that.
That is so meaningful. And I just think, you know, again, this is not my quote, and I don't know who originally said it. It resonated so deeply with me. But the quote is like, I found the world to be so lacking in safe places, so I decided to become one. When I first read that quote, like, it honestly, even just saying it brings emotion up for me. Right. And when you say that, like, about my work, I think, not that I am perfect, not that, you know, I am doing everything right, but it is a priority to me to say it's more than just the knowledge that helps us. It has to be the embodied knowledge. It has to connect. Like, for me, I really resonate with compassion. And for me, that connects a little bit with my faith. Like, I come from the Christian tradition, and, you know, the concept of the Hebrew word hesed it means like loving kindness. And in the Old Testament, for example, there's over like 350 references to this concept of this profound compassion. And I think about those types of concepts when we're talking about this work, because whatever faith perspective, or even not having one, whatever it is, I think all of us in healing work have to be held by more than facts, by more than a rigid practice. We have to, you know, I know you kind of mentioned like this gentleness, this compassion, this, sometimes it's like this motherly, but sometimes maybe it's fatherly. There's a reparative element to this work. And I think that there are lots of ways to access that repair, but it really matters that we have that kind of energy with us.
Oh, yes. As you were speaking, I was just thinking about some of the previous kind of therapies, and some of them are still around today, where they're really like, go for it, push through. And for someone like myself, that just doesn't work, because it is missing the embodiment of, I don't feel safe here. I don't feel welcome here. I can't just push, because my foundation is sand. I can't even stand up. What you called white knuckle it, you know, just push through. It is through this reparative work that we're able to have the courage to do something different, to take a chance, to take a risk. It's with compassion that's possible. You know, your book is titled Take What You Need, Soft Words for Hard Days. And I've heard you talk about, I think you were talking about this on Instagram, actually, about needs and how hard it is for those of us who have been survivors of developmental or you know, childhood trauma to actually recognize our needs. Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah, well, I love talking about this topic, partly because I think it's so central to healing that, you know, part of this process, you know, it is, and it can happen in lots of different ways, right? Sometimes we are mirrored, and in being mirrored, like in being seen, it helps us begin to recognize what's going on with us. Sometimes I know, like, I'm a parent. Sometimes in the process of parenting, it has been in that journey that I have recognized, oh, I had this whole slew of needs. I wasn't even aware that I had those needs until I became a parent. And I recognized I needed to somehow meet those needs for my kids. And then that recognition brought up the grief of all of the needs that weren't met for me, but that my body, and I see this a lot with my clients because I work often with folks who have developmental trauma, that there can be sort of this numbing that happens. Like there is a lack of awareness that it's even a thing, right? Like people sometimes talk about it like, you know, if you've grown up in a home with lots of chronic and unresolved trauma, it's like a fish swimming in water. And you don't say to the fish, how's the water? The fish doesn't know they're in water, right? And so for a lot of trauma survivors, it's not like when you're in the water of the trauma and you're like, I'm so sorry that your needs aren't being met. There may be no recognition for the level to which they're not being met. Maybe there's a little, but not much.
Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause, and while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal ingredients called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS-like irritability, moodiness, discomfort, or uncontrollable cravings, menopause symptoms such as hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts, low moods, poor sleep, and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Yes, Hormone Harmony can help with all of these things. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are more than 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And so I think about this work, right? So this work of take what you need. In a way, I mean, it is one offering. It's one piece of all of the work that is, I think, required in this journey. But it speaks to this reality. First of all, the posture that it would that I wanted to convey. First and foremost, I'm not trying to come in as the expert and tell you what you need. Like, our bodies are so wise. Our bodies do know. Like, they're always speaking to us, even when we don't yet have sort of the ears to hear, right? Because this is often what trauma does for us. It dampens the voice, even though the needs are still present. And so my hope with all of this work is that there would be multiple things that would happen. And one would be that it would first affirm to the person, like, yes, you have needs. Like, you have needs, and it is valid to have needs. And for some people, they're going to be on that. That's going to be part of their healing journey, is even to begin to thaw enough that they would have a recognition that I have needs. I have a body. I have emotions. I have grief. I have desires. I have these things, right? And then as we begin to feel safe enough that we can thaw, then we can begin to attune and we can say, okay, this is valid. Now, what can I be empowered to do about it? And so this book is sort of a practice in validating these things, like hopefully modeling, like, here are some things you might need. And then as we get more attuned, we might have a better sense of like, oh, I know what I need. I know where I'm, like, I know which chapter I'm flipping to today because I need somebody to tell me that I'm not alone. I need somebody to tell me that these hard days aren't going to last forever. I need somebody to tell me that I can be both soft and fierce. And so just all of this practice of honoring that this is part of what makes us human, having needs.
Yeah. So good. So good. I remember a long time ago, I worked with someone, kind of what you described, just really unaware of when she was even thirsty. And part of her work was starting to listen. And then also, I'm just remembering how she wanted her husband to throw out the garbage, but she just didn't feel comfortable saying it. So it started with her writing it on a brown paper bag. It sounds really maybe silly even, but it's not. It just shows the degree to which we adapt so that we can be safe. And if it meant don't listen to anything our body is saying, then that's what we do to survive. And unfortunately, then it has become a pattern. And that's what you're talking about, the work of unfreezing it. I like that.
Yeah, I think there's like a, you know, if we think of trauma as sort of a necessary frozenness in order for there to be fragmentation, right? So like that's what facilitates our disconnection. And so in order for something to not be frozen, there has to be a thaw, right? Mm-hmm. And in the thaw, that's where things are a little less cut and dry. It's not like I don't have complete clarity, but I'm beginning to recognize that I am a person who has a whole spectrum of things that it has maybe never been safe enough to consider. Like maybe it never even occurred to me when I think about your former client. For some people, I don't want to speak on her behalf. It's like often it never occurred to them to even name. Oh, it would be really helpful to me. Could you have take out the garbage? Could you please do that? Right. Because the patterning might be so strong that this is part of my own story. My father was terrifying. And because he was terrifying, I had two extremes. And one extreme was to be like almost like a feeling of like really intense sympathetic. Like it was like if you were going to say something, you needed to be ready to fight because it's going to get intense. Like you had to like see it through kind of. And I didn't really develop that as much until I got a little bit older and I had a little more. Yeah, I wasn't quite as young. I was like a teenager. So I had a little bit, you know, I could leave the house. I could things like that. But the younger pattern was just to overaccommodate and to walk on eggshells and to do whatever I would do it even before he asked. I got really good. My antenna, one of my therapists would say, your antenna are so strong. Mm-hmm. They're so, you know, they pull so much in. And I certainly know that my story is like so many other survivors, right? Like this is an example of how people adapt, particularly for developmental trauma. Because when you think about kids, you know, that there are so few choices to help you survive. So our body chooses the things that will keep us as safe as possible, even if those options later are so difficult for us. In some ways are the things that make us frustrated at ourselves. Why do I keep saying yes when I mean no? Why do I not stand up for myself? Why do I never say, hey, here's my preference? Why do I never advocate for what I actually believe? And there's a whole slew of stories that can come in, right? People have different nuances, but often it's related to such a lack of safety around our needs. And primarily, especially with those things, like this is boundary work. This is having a voice. This is being connected to our body and ourself. And so I think that all of this stuff, though it seems, I agree with you, like having needs seems like it would be so basic. Like There are so many people that I've worked with who have experienced a lot of shame in so many ways. Like, number one, why can't they just tell that they have needs and just act on it? There's shame about that. There's shame about that they have needs at all. And that there's shame that they're not over it by now. Like, why doesn't the original pain, why is it still weighing on me so deeply that it's impacting me even now, sometimes 30, 40, 50 years later?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was going 20, 30, 40, and you get frustrated with yourself. Just like you said, like that's, you tell yourself those words, why I was a child then, but it still impacts. Is that because we were so young when it was formed?
I believe that's a huge part of it. I mean, you know, essentially our brains are formed from the bottom up. So if you think about like the brain stem is really especially concerned with like literal, like visceral safety. Mm-hmm. And then as we develop, it continues to form, you know, sort of ending with the prefrontal cortex right around like, I don't know, right, maybe 26, 27 is when that is fully formed. Well, you think about where kids are in their development through 1, 2, you know, elementary ages into teenage years. I mean, these are hugely significant developmental ages for our neurobiology. So when our brains are having to shift around the trauma at these very, it's like low in our brain. So that's where it's like, top level thinking doesn't always address sort of bottom up wounding, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like the, you know, preverbal experiences where there's a little memory of it, body related to body sensations. Even when we have a story, when our brain, sometimes we learn as a way to survive, we learn to bypass the pain through trying to like think our feelings or to, you know, whether it's logic ourselves out of it. Sometimes it's spiritual bypassing. There's all these ways. So to answer your question, I do think it makes such a big impact, partly because the context, we are extremely vulnerable at those ages. It is literally shaping our core sense of self. And it's during really key times of development that ultimately can really affect how our brains ultimately are shaped.
And I think, you know, tied to that, the shame is a really also a hard one. Talk about your needs, but then, like you said, the shame for having needs or just shame in general. If you, in those years you've had trauma and you direct the shame towards yourself, that's a hard one also to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think shame is so pervasive when you've experienced developmental trauma. I think, you know, certainly everybody is different, but it is one of those things that we almost come to expect to be present if you have experienced developmental trauma. And in part because the way that kids are wired, all of us are wired, but particularly for kiddos, because we are wired to need our caregivers. Part of what's happening developmentally is we're also really appropriately egocentric. Meaning the world for, you know, a five-year-old, in a way, it does revolve around them. Mm-hmm. And that's not because five-year-olds are just like so selfish. It's because that's where developmentally it needs to be. It's appropriate at that time. But if you have an unsafe or abusive caregiver and the developmental lens is that the world revolves around you, of course you believe it's your own fault. It will always ultimately come back to you. And so shaming ourselves, participating in the shaming, the internalization, even if it's implicit shame, it doesn't even need to be the words that were spoken. It can be the way that mm-hmm. you were treated or the way you were looked at or the tension in the room when you said that you're sad or that you were hungry or that you wanted a hug or the contempt by a caregiver when you needed more soothing.
Exactly. Or walking out of the room when you're still, your heart's still pumping and nobody is soothing you and comforting you. Then you make a meaning out of it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so this shame piece is, again, I think that, you know, the frozen metaphor is an important idea because I do think that sometimes, well, it's like there's a frozenness around the shame where we just feel like we can't move, we can't do anything about our needs because the shame feels so heavy and strong. And this is where we invite curiosity to be like, well, you know, like I think about for some folks that I work with, like, would they think that it was shameful for their best friend to have a need? Would it be shameful for their child to have a need? Would it be, right, like all these places, and we begin to get creative and even innovative to see, can we melt that frozenness even a little bit to be able to just almost like, I think of the word, like almost like massage. Like it's like, it doesn't need to be a quick change. It can be the trajectory of the small steps towards being able to recognize that we have needs.
Yeah. And that's where Take What You Need comes up, because this is not like a full book. It's what I mean by that is it's, you've got little nuggets of quotes and just really significant stuff, but in bite size, we're able to take it in bite size portions, which I think is really healthy and good for trauma survivors.
Yeah, I love the language of bite size, you know, and I think so often it's like trauma is the opposite of that. Right.
Yep. Trauma swallowed you up.
Right. Absolutely. And it's, you know, just that by definition, it's just too much.
Yeah.
And so healing by definition must be different than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I think this is where, you know, my original book really is part of this, even this lens and sort of even all of my work, I think sort of is connected to each other. But I think of the posture of Trisofter around just like we really cannot heal a wound in the same way we created it or that it was created. Maybe we didn't create it, but it was created. And so being able to say, I think the hospitality of it is really like an important piece of saying, like, there's all these little nuggets, all these little bite size, and then you really have the agency and you are invited to at literally whatever pace feels good to you, feels good to your body, engage that work.
I love that. And you know how we talk about in trauma, language doesn't impact us because it's cognitive. And I think that that's not always the case. Take some of this. This is words, but these words are words that actually, I don't know, for me anyway, they don't stick up here. They just kind of go and they go into the body. It's where my body needs it. I can feel it in my body and it feels good. I think these are healing words. You can embody words.
I love that. And I thank you for that. I hope that is my desire for this book. And I think that's why I do my best. Certainly, I'm not perfect. I'm a person, but I do my best in my words to really emphasize, for example, just the invitational elements of it, the honoring of the pain, even as we talk about hope. Because even what I've learned in my therapeutic work is, gosh, sometimes like if someone's really, really, really struggling, they're really in like dorsal despair, and you tell them, hey, there are going to be better days. Gosh, that can feel so discouraging, right? For the person who is just so not in a place where they have enough safety to be able to imagine that for themselves. And so just in all of my words and in all of my writing, I try to bring, again, it's sort of this really open-handed way of being like, look, I'm not here to tell you your life experience. I don't know the exact details, but I do know what it's like for things to be really, really hard. And I do know what it's like to feel so alone. So if this feels helpful, then this is for you.
I find that that's what your words do. They offer compassion and empathy. Well, is there anything else you would like to say before we come to a close?
You know, I would just like to say, I love this conversation and thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it's just my deep hope that this will be sort of one of the threads, one of the resources that people can pull on as they sort of weave a tapestry of support for their own healing journey, because I know how hard the work is. And so that is just my hope, that this would be a part of sort of one of the things that they can pull from as they need it.
Beautiful. I will put a link for the book in the show notes, and you can buy it anywhere, Amazon, great coffee table book. Take what you need. All right. Thanks, Andy. Hope to have you on again. It's always such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.